In the head house, between the head house and the shrimp house, you could walk, literally walk in the store, walk under here, and look up, and they were climbing the wall on this particular structure. Now, in the other house, in the last location, the Olsen, we introduced blue termites down here in September in number 19, and we collected them all the way at the other side of the house. Now, remember, in the first two, there was little basements associated with it. Here, because it's just on a slab on grade, you can see that we connected the dots through the underside of the structure itself. Okay, the others, we assumed they followed the guidelines around to get to their locations. So, and you can see there are in this case there is one and five both had non-blue termites in them. Now, if we kept it going for another couple of rounds, will they would have ended up there or not? I don't know. Okay, so from that, here's a summary of what we ended up with. In site one, we had 16 collars. Seven of the collars had foragers in it. Seven of those, or 100% of them, had marked termites in them. And we started out with 782, and we actually marked over 4,000 of them. In site number two, we had 39 stations. 23 had foragers in them. Eight of them were dyed. And we started out with 371 and then increased it all the way up to 1,044 additional termites were, blue dyed termites were included. In number three, there were 30 collars, 16 had termites in them, 10 of them ended up with blue, and you can see the number that were associated with that. So what happens is in the first recapture, we had 4,000, almost 4,500 termites captured totally in the whole structure. Okay, 30 of them were blue termites. And then the second was 13 with 9 all the way down to 49 and 8. And you can see within 1 week, 2 weeks, what you're getting is that reduction in the number of termites are actually being taken out, even though the number of percentage-wise of blue termites still remains fairly high. In number two, we ended up with 3,000. It went up a little bit, but only two blue, and then way down compared to that of 654 total with five blue. At the Olsen location, they had over 13,000 that we collected. And then it went down to 8,000 and down to 2,000 with 27 of them, of those left that were blue. So, now, looking at the sites from the point of view of the Lincoln Index and the weighted mean index, if you look at these versus the one below, they are the same because it was only one colony. They had the maximum distance was 26 meters with a minimum total foraging distance of 297 meters. Now, that was only with collars with marked termites. Now, when we go down and decide, because the numbers were so low, we collapsed them all into one, and you can see that there wasn't much change, a little bit in number two site, but what you ended up with was a little bit larger of the maximum and quite a bit more of the minimum total foraging distance that would be established in each of the locations. So, in summary, what did we find? The number of termites per structures was uncertain, only because we're not sure whether some of those others that you can claim as colony number two wouldn't have ended up being associated with the initial colony. So we were uncertain. We didn't want to go down too far on that. The foraging populations that were established with the Lincoln Index and the mean weighted means were within previously published estimates of populations in the native desert. So, in other words, the numbers were not much different than what was published previously by Susan and Jones and Haverty, Mike Haverty. So, we're not seeing any differences because of the structure. And the maximum distance between that you could say that the blue traveled, marked termites traveled, was anywhere between 26 and 62 meters, which I found kind of interesting based on what Joe was mentioning about some of the colonies being really small of 8 to 10 meters. So I don't know. Maybe we got small colonies, but they like to travel quite a distance. And the last thing is the minimum total forage distance was between 297 meters to 2,427 meters. So again, that's a minimum, depending on how, you know, and that calculation has always been discussed in the literature, etc. So with that, I'll answer any questions and we'll go from there. I'll talk to you afterward, Rod.
This is a study of looking at the effects of different phagostimulants or carbohydrates on the transfer and uptake of hexafluoride was done at UC Riverside when I was still doing my PhD program, but now I have joined MGK. So it was done at UC Riverside, so my friends at Dow don't get alarmed that at MGK we are doing something. So as soon as we talk about the phagostimulants and the uptake of the IGR, and so first thing comes into our brain is BAITs, and that's what we are talking about today. And the BAITs have shown a good advantage over in controlling and maintaining the population of social insects like termites, ants, and wasps, and also something as simple as like cockroaches. But when you are developing any bait system, or there are three important components. One is the insects themselves, their behavior, food preference, and the foraging. Second thing is the bait matrix itself, its palatability, stability, and also the quality over time. Third thing is the AI active ingredient or the toxicant which you are using. It can be non-repellent, it can be slow acting, and it can be an IGR. Now the problem here is it is very hard to put all these three components together and formulate a very optimum system to control termites or any other insects. So they all are overlapping things, and to control any insects like this, you have to have all of them in a perfect balanced form. Now, coming back to the termite baits, both the physical properties and the chemical ingredients or the matrix affects the feeding behavior of termites. It has been shown, for example, in 1964 by Zenter and Koppel that the wood sticks degraded by Gliophyllum and Trivium brown rot fungus had significantly higher feeding by the termites. Now, coming to the commercialization of any of the products, the FMC's summon disc has been shown to be attractive to the subterranean termites, and especially the termite will follow the trail in the sand which is treated by the extract of this summon disc. Now, something as simple as carbohydrates like xylose, ribose, sucrose, and fructose has been shown to be attractive to the termites. And we chose these xylose, ribose, or other sugars to test, because one of the things when you are increasing the phagostimulant or the feeding effect on these baits or bait matrices in any system, you want the substance to be available, it should be easy to use, and it should be economical, and last but not least, should be utilized by the termites. Because if the termites are feeding by themselves, but if they are excreting it out at the same rate, and if they are not able to utilize it, then there is no fun in putting that thing in. So this is one of the example of one of those chai arenas which we used long back in 2003, just to point it out that when they were given the choice between the four sugars, the ones they feed quite a bit on this one, and then they move to someone else. So the objectives of these studies were to see the effect of the IGR on the uptake, and also what is the effect of on the increased uptake on the IGR transfer, and the effects of increased uptake on termite mortality, because that's the bottom line. At the end, we want to kill those termites. So here is the first set of results. On the x-axis, you are seeing the hexafluoride alone as the one treatment, and hexafluoride in combination of with different sugars like fructose, 5% ribose and 3% xylose. And before we move any further, the first question will come to your mind that is using different concentrations for different sugars. The thing is, we have done it in 2003 and 2004, this study where we used a range of concentrations, but these were the concentrations which the termite liked most. So we are using them as a treatment by itself. Now, you can see on the y-axis is the mean amount of filter paper eaten up by the termites. 50 termites were allowed to feed for 15 days, and these filter paper discs were weighed before the termites were put inside the system, and once the termites were taken out after the 15 days, we weighed them again. So here we can see that on ribose 5% and xylose 3%, there is significantly higher feeding compared to the control, which is hexafluoride alone. Now, before we go any further in the fun stuff of uptake and horizontal transfer, in 2005, Hagazma and Rust concluded by their study on hexafluoride that the threshold concentration required for the termites to die is about 114 nanograms plus minus 43.2 nanograms per termite. So this is the range between 75 nanograms to 150 nanograms is what you need for that effect to have on the termites, so the chitin synthesis inhibitor, inhibition of the chitin synthesis, basically. And two important things to keep in mind, and I can't overemphasize that, and it looks very simple, but sometimes it's easily lost. That donor termites, if it's having certain amount in its body, it's always going to transfer less amount of that from that amount to the any recipient to any recipient termite. It's true for at least 1-to-1 ratio. And second thing is, this just a hypothesis, that if the termites are having this higher titer of hexafluoride in their body at that point, when they're molting, and that will inhibit the chitin synthesis, and you will see an effect on the termite body. And once, if they're able to excrete in between that period and they go below this threshold level, they might go free. So their continuous feeding or the continuous presence of that hexafluoride in their body is required. And that's just my opinion. That may be true. Here are the results for the uptake of the hexafluoride and hexafluoride in combination with different sugars. The x-axis represents the days when the termites were sampled after feeding on this treated disc for 15 days. And on each sampling period, we took out the 10 termites and analyzed them on scintillation counter. Y-axis represents the amount of hexafluoride on the body of individual termites. What you can see here is, as early as 3 days, the amount of hexafluoride in the body of the termites which were fed on the hexafluoride in combination with xylose has significantly higher amounts. At day 6, it reached to the maximum, and then it stabilized. However, it took about 9 days to reach to the maximum when they were feeding on hexafluoride alone paper. So what it tells is that they acquire this hexafluoride up to the twice as much as they would acquire in the hexafluoride alone in 6 days when they are fed with something in presence of xylose. Now, we want to see what is the effect of this enhanced uptake on the transfer of this hexafluoride in the termite nest mates or the individuals. So the donor termites were allowed to feed on on all the four treatments, hexafluoride alone and hexafluoride in combination of one of the three sugars, all the three sugars basically. And they were allowed to feed for 7 days, and and these discs were dyed blue, so we know that they're fed on these sugars and they have the hexafluoride on their body, and they're mixed in the ratio of 1-to-1, 15 donor, 15 recipient termites, mixed for 7 days, and then 10 termites were sampled after the 7 days from donor and recipient. Now here we see that another set of results of this horizontal transfer. The donors are represented by blue bar, and recipients are represented by white bar. What we see here on the x-axis are all those four treatments, and right away you can see the amount of hexafluoride on the body of the donors which are feeding on the hexafluoride in the presence of xylose has significantly higher amounts of nanograms. They have about like 325 nanograms on their body compared to 250 nanograms. Now you can see that initial gap of 2.54, around twofold has decreased over a period of time, and one of the reason is because you are looking at these termites once they were taken out of the hexafluoride or feeding on the hexafluoride for 7 days. Now, and then they were taken out and you are looking at them after the 7 days. So in the meantime, they have excreted some amounts. But the take-home message is that they were able to transfer significantly higher amounts to the recipient termites also. And another thing here is that though they have about 3 times as much hexafluoride on their body, they are not able to transfer all of that to the recipients. Probably in 1-to-1 ratio, probably they may be able to transfer to some other individuals. We are not sure, but at least it comes about to 15-25%. Then looking at the mortality, the termites were allowed to feed. Now, since we know that the xylose is the key there, 3% xylose, so we tested the 3% xylose treated hexafluoride compared to the simple hexafluoride and against the control. So x-axis represents the again the treatments, and we fed the termites for 5 days, took them out, put them in the fresh dishes, and given the fresh paper towel, and then we observed the mortality after 25 days. What we see here, the percent mortality is significantly higher when they eat on hexafluoride in presence of xylose compared to hexafluoride alone, and they come close to 50. There is a 50% mortality in those treatments compared to around 30% mortality in the hexafluoride alone. Now, another thing we did is extended this another experiment on the same lines, but here we continue. The feeding was continuous for 15 days, and the mortality was recorded after 15 days. X-axis again represents the treatments, hexafluoride alone and in presence of xylose. And what we see is the percent mortality now has touched around 70% and is still significantly higher than in the hexafluoride alone. So, at the end, I will conclude that the phagostimulants can enhance the uptake of an IGR in these bait matrix systems, especially it's true for western subterranean termites. And the IGRs are more easily transferred to nest, more efficiently transferred to nest mess when there is a high titer level on their body or inside their body. And enhanced uptake and transfer lead to higher percent mortality. We have just seen that. And the continuous feeding on the baits with IGR is very crucial. At the end, I would like to acknowledge Dr. Rust, Dr. Clarks, and all the urban entomology lab members at UC Riverside. Any questions?
Today I will talk a little bit about termites' ecological problem associated with the mulch application and the potential, the technology we can develop. As you know, the termites is an invasive species, especially to our state, it's a Mississippi state. I try to give you an example how the termites distribute in our state. You know, if we divide to the three band of the area from the coastal area, southern area, and the central area, we can see some, the trends here that, the almost 100% of the county already being infested by this, Formosan termites. And the central area, you can see here that the percentage is, I cannot say exactly, it should be out. That's 72%. And go to the central percent is 42%. And if you can see this right side of this chart, you can see that different severity of the damage caused by Formosan termites in different areas. The central area is the lowest, and the coastal area is the highest, based on the alleys attracted by the light trap. So that is can see that invasive trends from south to north is reduced the damage, but the trends still keep going into spreading. The problem is for us, the challenge is how to prevent the Formosan termites further spreading, including long distance and local spreading. And the second challenge is how to manage the population and spread population. Last one is how to reduce the termiticide use in an urban area. And the relationship of the Formosan termites and the tree-based mulch is kind of lots of the people suspect as a big ecological factor to affect this. Let's just see that different variety of the mulch, organic mulch and inorganic mulch, there's sitting around just in the urban area, it's extensively used. That this as a big factor is affected the termites spreading locally and long distantly, and possibly to with homing activity go with mulch products. And this is something is alleys during swarm time that their first landing on this the wood, mulch, as a temporary habitat and a nutrition, transition time and before they are attacked in the house, really. Let's look like a little bit this, taste, for the alleys, they're survive, and you can see that, non-weather and weather is a significant difference, for the survival rate. The weather is reduced that the adverse factor to against the termites, so that is obviously the weather will be favorite to that termites to habitat and grows their colony. That is a chart is represented as a four type of the pattern of the termites alleys can develop survive in the different type of the mulch, and here the A type is a best one substrate for the alias develop their incipient colony. They have the highest colony size and the highest survivorship. And the B is a little moderate in that range. And the lowest is a C pattern. And the rest of this, you know, brown color of the circle is represent a different type of the regular wood of food. And a nutrition point of view, we can see that the mulch is of, you know, different, you know, response to the termites feeding and the habitat that, you know, survive. Well, that's a problem is we're frustrated in how that we can deal with this, you know, technology can develop potentially and treat the, or enhance the, you know,